You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for only £12 for our print and online editions, plus get 6 months of digital access free to The Telegraph. Go to spectator.co.uk/telegraph.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So over the weekend, the wranglings between local leaders in the north of England and central government have continued over whether or not places will go into Tier 3 lockdown. Katie, can you update us on the developments over the weekend?
Yes, there's been lots of to-ing and fro-ing and plenty of annoyance on both sides. I think from the number 10 perspective, they feel as though Andy Burnham has been hard to pin down, perhaps playing to the gallery rather than putting the head down. Whereas on the Andy Burnham side, and if you look at Greater Manchester, including some Tory MPs, they feel frustrated that the government hasn't been offering more in terms of financial packages. But we now appear to be getting to a point after Andy Burnham's Mar interview where both sides are in conversation, and it seems to be almost getting close. I think the more behind closed doors it is, the more promising it is in terms of the outcome. And I think, though you can get me wrong, we haven't had any public media interviews now for about 12 hours. And there is hope that with the government offering more funds, depending who you speak to, this is in the tens of millions or the hundreds, we could be about to see something. If it doesn't come to fruition, is the government going to just place Manchester in Tier 3 anyway? That's a suspicion. I think that what's been interesting is you've seen the government making this case that almost it will be on Andy Burnham if the ICUs are overflowed and he's delayed it and made the situation worse. And I think today with stories in the newspapers about how ICUs in the Northwest are getting in a very difficult place, that is adding pressure on. There are plenty of people who quibble with the ICU figures, but I think as a political instrument, you can see how it is being used to put pressure on Andy Burnham. So I think there is more hope it's heading that way, but I think general probably bigger picture, we're in a situation where we're expecting quite a few areas to go into Tier 3 this week. The government is determined really to try and keep with this local regional approach, but we could get into a situation where swathes of the country are locked down in Tier 3, and there's a few bits popping up such as Cornwall where they're not. And I think an interesting element to all this is just within the Tory party, how this is landing, because you saw at the weekend one of the instruments, perhaps a government organised one that he used to ultimately try and put pressure on everyone in Greater Manchester was a letter from Tory MPs in Tier 1 areas in the south saying, we know you're in a difficult place, but it would make no sense to punish us too. Now, I think there is an argument on the regional approach, which is if, in Cornwall the cases are so much lower, what are you actually achieving by locking everyone down? However, I'm not sure a letter in which you're saying, look, you're in real trouble, sure, don't bring us down with you, is the way to do it. And that clearly has opened up tensions. I think we're seeing more of this north-south divide, not just in terms of Andy Burnham, but also now in terms of Tory MPs. So I don't think that has been good for morale particularly. And so just one final thing I think is interesting with the Tory MPs is you have had Greater Manchester MPs rowing in behind Andy Burnham, but I think we might start to see that break a bit, because ultimately Andy Burnham does talk about, restrictions maybe not being as effective, but is ultimately pushing for financial packages, where there are Tory MPs in the Greater Manchester area, such as Graham Brady, who are opposed to restrictions. They argue that they are, counterproductive. So I think we could start to see that dividing line if money is offered.
And James, we started to see a little bit of that last night as well with this letter from the Red Wall MPs saying, well, Andy Burnham, you represent us on some things, but not on a national circuit breaker, which of course Andy Burnham wants to talk about because he's a Labour politician. So there are all sorts of overlapping dynamics and political allegiances changing at the moment.
I think Katie hit the nail on the head, right? The question is, do you just want more support to go into Tier 3, or are you sceptical of the whole strategy of shutting things and the strategy that causes? I think what's happening in the North East is actually quite interesting. I mean, everyone thought that the North East was going to have to end up going into Tier 3. It now looks like it's going to avoid going into Tier 2. There's also a kind of mild interesting thing, I think, in Manchester, which is the percentage of positive tests is actually on the decline. And I was talking to one cabinet minister last week who thinks that, it might be tilting at the wrong windmill, which is, what it might be is what might have driven the surge of cases in Manchester is the student population, the outbreak there might have distorted the figures. And because those students are young and tend to be quite healthy, it might not be having the same effect on hospital admissions as it would if it had started off in the kind of community rather than the university community. Now, obviously, the question becomes, you know, how do you stop something spreading from the university community to a general community, given that students still shop in Tesco's or Sainsbury's and all that? But I mean, that is an interesting dynamic to watch.
But James, isn't there confusion over the student numbers as well? Because there have been rumours that the students were counted at their home addresses with their parents rather than where their university was. Or are they? Do we know what the situation is?
I think anyone who remembers, and you will remember more recently than me, Cindy, the kind of confusion that is caused as a student as to what your home address is. Is it your university address or is it your parents' address, essentially? And I think that does seem to have been an issue with some of the testing. I know that one of the reasons why people think that Richmond went up, suddenly became such a London hotspot, was that point about university students being counted against, you know, the Richmond home borough test, even if they were having the test in Nottingham or Manchester and the like.
And Katie, meanwhile, when it comes to these talks with Andy Burnham and other local leaders, it seems that it's Eddie Lister who's been taking the charge here. Is that significant at all in terms of the number 10 figure who's been on the front of this rather than, say, Dominic Cummings?
I think there's a danger in reading too much into it. I mean, there's lots of rumours swirling around about number 10 dynamics, but I think on Eddie Lister, he is a former local government figure. And also, I do think everyone to a degree is aware of their own strengths and weaknesses. And if you are going to go for a charm offensive, I think plenty of the Vote Leave alumni would admit that they would not be the best front foot, even if they could do some of the strategy behind it. And someone like Eddie Lister would be a better person for that.
And meanwhile, James, it's not just that England that's going under stricter rules for lockdown. Europe as well seems to be hit by the second bout.
Yeah, it is a remarkable thing. Every time you think a country in Europe has kind of got on top of things and is doing really well, you know, something comes. I mean, Italy is a classic example of this. You know, everyone thought, oh, Italy got hit really badly by the first wave. They then changed things around and they appeared to be avoiding the worst of a second wave. You know, in the summer, everyone was like, oh, look, you can go to Italy, low infection rates, everyone wears masks. They've now had a sudden surge in cases. Angela Merkel used her personal podcast to kind of basically say to Germans, basically, to kind of try and cut against the kind of Germany has this highly decentralised federal system, but she tried to kind of appeal to all Germans, regardless of where they are in the country, to, you know, basically avoid all unnecessary contact. You know, the text of the podcast sounds very like Boris Johnson's first address before the actual lockdown, when he said, like, please cease all unnecessary social contact. In Belgium, you've got the government basically saying the virus is now beyond, you know, it's out of our control, it's in the lap of the gods. And I think this is a reflection of how so many governments across Europe are struggling to deal with this. Now, obviously, you know, Germany is handling the situation better and is in a better place than most other European governments. But, you know, you look at France and Spain and Britain all having very similar problems, and now Italy appears to be back on the same way. And I think this second wave is so much more challenging because the economic hit that you took first time round, you know, if you get a second wave, that you're not going to get, I mean, it's a statement that's really obvious in some ways, but you're not going to get a V-shaped recovery. I also think the big break on investment is uncertainty. And the longer the uncertainty about whether there's going to be a third wave, for example, all this goes on, the longer people are going to wait before they decide to invest their money, the greater the effect on the economy of this virus is going to be.
And Katie, finally, today the government released its new public information campaign slogan of Brexit, time is running out. Isn't that true? So how is the Brexit negotiations going?
Well, we heard from Boris Johnson on Friday a clip ultimately saying, not that we got to the end of the road of these negotiations, but he thought there was little chance of them reaching a deal with the current trajectory, saying that it was quite clear they weren't going to get a Canada-style deal. So in that case, you go to an Australia-style deal, also known as a no deal, and also suggesting that they were not going to engage anymore with the talks. Now, I think that it was clear on Friday, and I think has now been also clarified by the government, although they were saying we're not going to continue with the talks as planned, there was a suggestion that the EU will come to us, we'll talk. Now, Michel Barnier was supposed to come to the UK today. As far as we know, that is not happening. But dialogue is ongoing. And Michael Gove at the weekend described, you know, the door is ajar. So I think there's clearly still time for developments to go in. I still get the sense on both sides that they believe a deal is very possible. But ultimately, it's a question of who is going to buckle or give something. I think the UK side could move on some things. But what really riled them last week was with their EU Council summit, the suggestion all had to be on the UK side. So one thing they did at the weekend was get Michael Gove out to do the Sunday round, write an op-ed, and the idea being, of all the Brexiteers in government, Michael Gove is often reported to be the one who is most squeamish about no deal. Mm. So to have him out there saying, we'll do it, I think was clearly trying to suggest, you know, don't think that we won't, is the message to Brussels. But I think at this point, we've just got to see how far the EU side is willing to move on things like fisheries.
And James, today the House of Lords will finally get the chance to debate the internal market bill. Is that going to be dramatic? The Daily Mail leads with a front page of Archbishop's assault on the government on Brexit.
I think there'll be a lot of disquiet expressed in the House of Lords. And the interesting question is, where does it come from? Because I think the Lords will be very reluctant to get into the peers versus Brexit dynamic. But the more Brexiteers in the House of Lords who speak out against this bill, and we know that Michael Howard, for example, has been very critical of it, of a Northern Ireland clause of it, to be more accurate, the more, I think, the more license, I think, the other members of the House of Lords will have not to back down on the question. Now, the government's calculation is that they'll do kind of a few rounds of ping-pong with the Lords, and then the Lords will say, OK, we don't like this, but you'll be elected House, and they'll step out of the way. Given the conversations I've been having with some peers recently, I am not 100% convinced that that will happen. I mean, there is a non-negligible chance that the Lords decides to dig its heel on this, treating it as a kind of fundamental kind of rule of law issue. I mean, the other thing as well to remember is the progress of this bill is obviously related to the progress of the negotiations. I think there is very little chance of any trade deal being ratified, if there was one, and a deal made by the European Parliament if these clauses were still in it. So I think what you would be looking at is a situation where if there was a deal struck, I would expect the UK to say, right, you know, to declare victory and go home, and the clauses to go, because otherwise the clauses would threaten to derail the ratification process, which is going to have to be fairly rapid. And in some ways, the clauses going would also give the European Parliament, which can be a bit scratchy, a kind of win. But obviously that depends on there being a deal. And as Katie said, that's far from certain at the moment. And I think that what everyone is trying to work out is whether the government's purely trying to force more concessions out of the EU, you know, come back to us on our terms. And there's no doubt that the EU miscalculated in its council conclusions. Two things. First of all, missing out the word intensify. And secondly, saying that all the compromises had to come from the UK. Something that, you know, Angela Merkel, Mark Rutte, Michel Martin, Michel Barnier himself have all tried to come and say, no, that's, even though that's what it says, that's not quite what we meant. But, you know, the question is, I think, Frost and Barnier speak today, can you get enough momentum into this for the UK government to say, okay, that's all right? And I think the kind of secondly is, you know, we all know that Boris Johnson is, it's not when number 10 is divided, Boris Johnson is internally divided on the balance between whether he wants a deal or doesn't want a deal. He is still kind of constantly assessing and calculating on that front. And I do think, though, that there is a kind of slight COVID factor here, which is, you talked about the publicity campaign telling businesses to get ready. I think it is harder to say to the businesses, look, get ready, it'll be your fault if you're not prepared, when businesses at the same time are trying to deal with all these constantly changing new requirements coming from the government on COVID.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And to hear more analysis from James, Katie, more Spectator journalists and other special guests, and hosted by Andrew Neil, the Spectator's chairman, then do tune in to Thursday's Spectator TV The Week in 60 Minutes. You can get that at spectator.co.uk/TV. You can watch it for free, and it's in partnership with Charles Stanley, the wealth manager. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.